Good morning and welcome to the City of Palm Coast City Council meeting. It is July 21st, 2020. Pursuant to the governor's executive order suspending all Florida statutes that require a quorum to be present in person at local government public meetings or require a local government body to meet at a specific public place, the city may conduct meetings of its city council without having a quorum of its members present physically or at any specific location and utilizing communications media technology such as telephonic or video conferencing provided by Florida statutes. As mayor, pursuant to the authority granted to me by the city charter, I declared a public emergency on March 15, 2020 in response to COVID-19. Furthermore, pursuant to the powers of the governor's executive order, I suspended all city requirements that require a physical quorum to be present to conduct this meeting and authorized that this meeting be conducted by communications media technology under the city's state of emergency proclamation for virtual meetings executed on April 3rd, 2020. The city manager, pursuant to the authority granted him by the city's initial state of emergency for COVID-19, has closed City Hall to the public. Therefore, no member of the public will be allowed into the community wing of City Hall during this meeting. Notice that this meeting was going to be held by communication media technology and not at a physical location was posted on the city's website at least 5 days ago. The notice provided that those members of the public needing reasonable accommodation to participate in the meeting could contact the city clerk for assistance by noon on Monday, May 18, 2020. Access to this meeting is being provided via live stream on the city's website at www.palmcoastgov.com and by calling 386-223-1690. Should you need technical assistance, please call 386-986-2391. Today is July 21st, 2020, and it is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland?
Here.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Good morning, present.
Yep. Council Member Branquino?
Here.
And Council Member Cuff? Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you so much. We'll now move to the public agenda portion of public participation. Public participation will work as follows. We're asking each individual and resident to please call in at 386-223-1690. You will need to hit the *9 to raise your hand to provide your comments. We're asking all commenters to please state your name clearly for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin. Thank you. Thank you, Doug. Seeing no public comment, we'll take close public comment, and we'll bring it to agenda item number 1, which is the minutes. I'm looking for a motion to approve.
I'll make that motion to 3 minutes.
Wonderful. That includes all of agenda item number 1. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call, Virginia, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Present.
Council Member Branquino?
Yes.
Council Member Cuff?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 2, which is a proclamation, Christmas in July. I'm going to be reading this proclamation. I don't see anyone receiving it on. Are we just going to be giving this remotely?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you. Whereas family poverty transcends race, religion, and ethnicity, and is one of the greatest challenges to not only the family, but the entire community, which suffers the consequences of its many effects on our children. According to the ALICE report for Florida, in 2018, 46% of households still struggled to make ends meet, while 13% of these struggling households were living below the federal poverty level. Another 33% were ALICE, assisted, limited, income constrained, and employed. These households earned above the FPL, but not enough to afford basic household necessities. Whereas Christmas Come True is a nonprofit organization established in 2009 that addresses the many aspects of family poverty in Flagler County, including food distribution, financial assistance with housing, utilities, transportation, furniture, home goods, and medical expenses. Since 2012, Christmas Come True has provided over 82,000 in assistance throughout the year. Since 2009, we have provided a complete personalized Christmas experience for a total of 1,189 families with 3,390 children by providing a Christmas dinner, new clothing, toys, gifts, and Christmas stockings filled with hygiene products and goodies. And whereas Christmas Come True is a nonprofit organization in Flagler County that provides free furniture and home goods for families in crisis. And whereas Christmas Come True has expanded their system by incorporating a resale shop called Begin Again Home Goods to enable their expansion of furniture and home goods. Whereas the COVID-19 pandemic resulted in many more families suffering a devastating loss of income, Christmas in July events will enable Christmas Come True to provide additional assistance with food, rent, car payments, car registrants, car insurance, furniture, and home goods to those families. And whereas this recognition also allows the community to support working together to create an environment where people can share their time, treasure, and talents to help the families who were affected by recent events. Now, therefore, be proclaimed by the mayor, the city council, and the city of Palm Coast, Florida, that the month of July 2020 as Christmas in July. City of Palm Coast calls upon its citizens, businesses, and civic organizations to further recognize that it takes an entire community to stand together and make a difference. Together, we can break the cycle and impact the lives of future generations. Signed this 21st day of July, 2020, Mayor Melissa Holland. So I just want to recognize Nadine King and the many volunteers that organize and raise funds for this very worthy cause. Thank you for all your efforts. It certainly has made an impact and improved the lives of many, including those that have been truly impacted by COVID-19. So thank you very much. We'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is a presentation on COVID-19 updates.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Good morning. We do have Captain Thomas Asconi and Deputy Chief Brad Clark here today to talk. Before they jump into their presentation, just a few updates on COVID-19 from my perspective. We did discuss and get consent and some approval meeting back for wastewater testing so we could have yet another venue to track the spread of the shed virus within the community. We'll start releasing now a sequence of heat maps based off the zip code data that our internal teams led by Steve Harris with Palm Coast Connect has created, and it's actually, now that we have 5 maps in, telling an amazing story of the spread and the areas of, and you know, the hot spots within our community of COVID-19. So again, using this data to make data-driven management decisions, to be proactive with the health department, to be proactive with our medical partners as we've been sharing this information, just adds more tools in our toolbox. That being said, I think as staff, when we met earlier this week, we all generally agreed we've moved from containment, which was our initial philosophy and our reopening strategy, to what is being termed as crisis management at this point, I think, as you know and as the community knows. So with that, we have been reevaluating our reopening strategies. We've been reevaluating our employee practices and employee policies. COVID absolutely is starting to affect our workforce in various ways. And our discussions with our executive team and with our staff has been, we chose careers in public service, and with that's a responsibility our staff has to continue to put our community first, service above self, and to keep our community whole and healthy. So with that, we have to be healthy to respond to our community and to be here to serve our community. Of course, our fire department continues to exemplify that with their motto they've been living now for several months, with letting their badge be our shield. They continue to take the forefront with us, have engaged every one of our executive team directors, meet regularly to help us guide through the best practices and best information. That continues to be essential to a successful and healthy opening and continued operation of staff. And then some of our other critical frontline workers, which include our water and wastewater utility folks. And Just like fire and water and wastewater utility, a lot of these positions are people who are highly experienced, who are expertly trained with years and years of specialized and focused training. And so again, that critical nature of making sure we keep our employees able to come. In good times, you have interlocals or mutual aid agreements where another city might send help. And as you know, everyone is stressed right now. So we continue to focus on resource-driven approach with a safety-driven approach to make sure, again, we can serve our community. And we will continue to report. I do believe also, and I will mention this now and probably again in our comments, because of the nature of where we're at with the resurgence of the virus, the virtual town hall team has gotten back together. And we will have another virtual town hall resuming on the 29th of July, I believe is the first date, just to continue to engage and inform with the newest and best information that we have. And we continue to monitor our operations internally and adjust our practices at our tennis center, at our golf course. I know the food truck is resuming with again, augmented practices, distancing, some other things. We continue to look at those and make sure we remain on the right track as, you know, we're back to those initial days, I believe, where for a while we had some consistent information or it felt consistent for a little bit of time, and now things, again, are changing, you know, almost on a daily basis. So with that, I would turn it over to Captain Asconi and Deputy Chief.
Before you do that, Matt, I had a question about some of your comments. In regards to the wastewater testing, has there been an overlay map that has been created as far as where the schools are located in the different zones that have been identified for the testing, and as well as the residential and commercial assisted living facilities?
So, two-part answer. Samplers were installed this week to test those six zones. I have a meeting with Steve Harris, who's leading that mapping effort today, right after the council meeting, to discuss the finalization of how we're going to graph that data. I know you had mentioned at the previous council meeting, and they are aware of this school zone, you know, sort of interface to help us understand one level deeper of information. So I don't have a full answer to that question yet.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, because whether or not the schools are reopened, that is yet, you know, I think that's been decided that, yes, they're moving forward with it, but they're going to be discussing it at a school board level to make that final decision, and I think there's going to be a hybrid that's offered to students. However, if indeed the schools are opened and there is a spike in cases, and we see it in our wastewater testing, and there's a trend that's associated with the given zip codes from the health department, and we can sort of track that as a way and a mechanism of not only aggressively, proactively putting boots on the ground to determine if it's neighborhood related or whether it's school related, and how they in fact geolocate that zone to ensure the public health safety. I think that's a critical component to this because we have the technology to do it. So I say let's try to utilize that.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay. And before we move on, or council, any questions for Matt's discussion before we turn it over to our chief?
No, not yet.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you again. And it looks like we also have Deputy Chief Clark. So, good morning, which is a surprise. So I'm not sure who's leading off, but if the fire department would like to get started, thank you very much.
Good morning, City Manager. If you would mind, I would like to start with Captain Asconi to give us the global view, and then I can update you a little bit on how the department is prepared and continuing.
Good morning, Mayor, Council, Mr. City Manager. Thomas Coney, Fire Captain. Reviewing the numbers over the last 5 weeks, there's been a really big change. 5 weeks ago, we were at 75,000 residents in the state of Florida that were positive for COVID. This week, as of this morning, we're at 360,394 positive cases in the state of Florida. Again, 5 weeks ago, we were under 172 in Flagler County. This morning, we're 659, 265 which are in Palm Coast with the DOH zip codes. We've increased to 59 hospitalizations, and sadly, we're now at 7 fatalities. This virus is prevalent in our community. Trying to contain it really is not where we're at anymore. It's more like City Manager said, keeping our workforce safe and healthy and trying to do those things. One big thing that we are doing is mask wearing. As you know, we have that city proclamation of wearing masks in the community. Fire department has partnered with the health department last week, and we gave out over 25,000 masks. Our volunteers worked hard from Monday through Monday and gave out, said 25,000 masks. We have another 16 cases that we have available to give out. So we are doing everything we can to help the community move forward. The health department is looking at 10 key indicators that I discussed the last council meeting as far as moving forward through our phases. And as of last week, we hit 7 of those 10 indicators. And some of those indicators are the increased testing percentages. 5 weeks ago, Flagler County was testing at about 1% positive, just over 1%. Today, we're just over 6%. So 5 weeks ago, we were testing only the people that were symptomatic and had the strict COVID questions for testing. Were they around somebody contacted with COVID? Are they running a fever? We were looking for higher percentages then, and we were low. Today, we're testing almost everybody, and we are over 6%. Another thing that we are looking at is increased COVID-related ED visits and hospital bed spacing. 5 weeks ago, we had 40% availability. I believe it's been well known or shared that our hospital bed spacing has diminished significantly in our community. So we're going to continue monitoring those 10 key factors about moving forward. We're going to continue staying slow and deliberate and steady. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. We're not out of the woods yet. We are still expecting this to continue probably through March. How heavy and prevalent will it be in our community or our state moving forward will really depend on what we do and what our citizens do to help protect themselves and protect ourselves. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Clark.
Thank you, Captain. Good morning, Mayor and Council and City Manager. Just a quick update on the status of the fire department. We're working with the medical director for the city and county. She is an emergency room physician by trade. She serves as our medical director. She's giving us great guidance on keeping up with the CDC guidelines on getting back to work with employees. The CDC guidelines are, of course, evolving constantly, as you hear from Captain Asconi at each meeting. But the most current information we have on employees who may have been exposed but are not symptomatic, employees who did test positive, and getting them back to work at a safe time, almost on, like a distance from when they were first symptomatic. Those policies are underway and being updated currently. We're also creating updated decon procedures because of the great spike that we're going through right now. Instead of doing the kind of monthly, periodic, and as necessary when we did have somebody who did have symptoms, we are now back down to where we are doing decontamination at each fire station, and each fire apparatus is done now weekly. As the captain pointed out, the mask distribution, which is right here next to my office, has been tremendous over the last week. The volunteer associates who were the group of volunteers for the department that are more advanced in their age have just absolutely, they've done a great job. They really starred in this distribution. They worked for more than 40 hours last week. Overall, there has been over 150 hours of staff time put into that distribution. Healthy workforce continues to be our priority. We are stocked with supplies, and resupplying is not problematic for us. We do have our people in the right personal protective equipment, not just cloth masks when they're out in the field and treating patients. We regularly interact and treat and assist in the transport of patients who are confirmed positive. The virus is real and it's in our town, and I think most of us understand that now. I still run into people on occasion at stores that don't buy in, but it is certainly widespread here. We're in community spread now. It's an unfortunate side effect, but we are for sure. On a positive note, we did receive a grant from the U.S. Fire Administration. We'll be bringing to this body for acceptance of the next within the next couple of meetings. But it is it's a grant to resupply some personal protective equipment from the U.S. Fire Administration under FEMA. As far as our workforce goes right now, we are healthy. We take that as a source of our continued effort. We do have one employee on military deployment. He probably, because of his rank and specialty, will be deployed for the remainder of the calendar year, but we're awfully proud of him. He spends a lot of time working in the state EOC. I think that's about as succinct as I can make the update. As you might imagine, the majority of our work week is spent dealing with the disaster we're dealing with, but I would be happy to answer any questions if there are any, but thank you for your time.
So I just a couple comments, and then I'll ask council to open up to questions or discussion. Matt, where is our actual written communication strategy around COVID and the plan that we could see, especially in light of mask wearing? What we're hearing as weekly updates from our emergency management team, and including your response as far as the safety and welfare, but communications has got to be a top priority throughout this, because yes, we're reinstituting the virtual town hall meetings, but it'd be nice if there's an actual written drafted document identifying all the different elements on a continuum basis on what we're doing to communicate with our residents directly, whether it be a mask wearing campaign, following the adoption of our resolution, requiring masks for our residents, whether it be, again, the testing sites and locations and what is required for appointments, and then certainly updating those with the wastewater testing areas, and then also just where we are with cases, how we're mapping those, how we're tracking those, Palm Coast Connect cases as far as COVID responses, any updates regarding tracking of information response times. Where is that actual plan?
We can bring that forward, the written okay. plan that exists, absolutely.
Okay, all right, yeah, I think that's important. because we're all here, and if the residents are listening, that's fantastic, but for those that are not, we need to get this information out to them. Do you have any questions?
Yes, just a comment. As much as I think that communications are a top priority, and they are, one of the things that really makes me happy, okay, it's that the decisions that have been made regarding this whole COVID virus are made based on health department and the CDC advice. So I'm proud of our fire people, just let me put it, call them fire people for now because I don't want to get any names, but they're doing a great job by respecting the CDC and the health departments. None of us here are medical doctors, so we got to listen to them. If this was a political problem, then would be us. It's not a political problem, so let's listen to CDC and the health department. Thank you. Good job, guys.
I agree. Council, questions or comments? Doug? Mayor Clufus.
Thank you and good morning, and amen to Councilmember Branchino's comments. I just had one question. I was curious, has there been a change in feedback with the data that we're getting? Because I know that has changed at the federal level. I was just wondering if that has had any impact on us locally, or whether or not over this past week that we're still getting the same data just as regularly and there's no interruption in data flow. I'm unsure whether or not this would be felt by like Bob Snyder's level, or whether it even filtered down to our local level. So if anyone has feedback on if there's any irregularities or any change in process, I was just curious.
Yes, sir. Our information flow is open. Mr. Snyder meets with us regularly and continues to provide us with all the necessary information to help us move forward.
Awesome. Excellent. Very glad to hear that. Thank you. And thank you for everything everyone is doing.
Does it look like? Okay, no. Councilmember Cuff?
Yes, I wasn't going to chime in, but I would like to underscore my interest in seeing what the city's communication plan is going forward on this. With all of the misinformation that's being put out there, I saw a report this morning that at least in one segment of the population, 31% of the people polled believe statistics are being exaggerated, the deaths are being overreported, cases are not being accurately reported. And again, if this were just a war of words, that'd be one thing, but given the serious threat to the public health and safety, I think we need to do everything we can to communicate clearly and accurately. And if something changes, we need to be able to quickly explain why that has changed. It's like whack-a-mole, we'll never be able to avoid all of the misinformation, but to be able to communicate in as timely a manner as possible what's actually happening and what needs to be done if we're going to get this under control, be able to reopen the schools, keep the economy moving, and get back to anything like normal life. So that's my only comment. Again, thanks to the first responders and the folks that are out in the field having to deal with these cases every day, but we need to do our part as well with communicating a coherent and accurate message to our citizens.
Great. Thank you, each and every comment, and I echo those comments, not only to our first responders, to all the departments, certainly also out in the field, the technicians that are continuing to keep our city running. So we certainly appreciate this effort through these very unprecedented times. Does that conclude the presentation?
Yes,
okay, all right. Agenda item number 4 is a resolution approving an amendment to the Citizens Participation Plan, FY19 CDBG Annual Action Plan. Who's going
to? We have Jose Papa here this morning to discuss and answer questions.
Okay, sorry. Good morning, Mayor,
morning.
Members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department. And this item today is the public hearing for an amendment to our Citizens Participation Plan and the Federal Fiscal Year 2019 Annual Action Plan, as we presented to you last week. There's been no changes since what we presented to you last week. Just to briefly go over what this amendment is for. This amendment is based on the CARES Act, making an additional $299,000 available in CDBG funds for use in addressing the coronavirus pandemic. And as part of that funding act, HUD was provided authority to grant certain waivers and requirements to expedite the use of these CDBG funds. And in addition to these CDBG funds, there were certain waivers available for allocations to the fiscal year 2019 and 2020 allocations. One of the waivers that the city will take advantage of is to amend the Citizen Participation Plan and the Annual Action Plan concurrently to establish and implement an expedited procedures by providing for a public comment of not less than 5 days for these amendments that are being proposed. And another waiver that's provided to HUD and has been provided for entitlement communities such as the City of Palm Coast is that waiver of the 15% of the cap for public service. And again, that waiver is provided so that these funds can be used for activities to prevent, prepare for, and respond to the coronavirus. So the action we're taking here today would be to amend the Citizen Participation Plan as well as the action plan to allow a 5-day public comment period, which has passed, and we did not receive any comments from the public for those amendments. Additionally, we will amend the action plan to utilize the available funds as provided for utility payment assistance, as stated in our last workshop. This was reviewed by the Citizens Advisory Task Force, and they recommended approval. As the next step, should Council approve the amendment, we will prepare the amendment package for submittal to HUD. We'll then receive the funding agreement to allow us to to tap into the funds. We will promote this program in coordination with our communications team, and at that time, we will be able to start receiving applications in our office. And I'll be happy to answer any questions at this time.
What's the timeline on this?
We think that we should be able to be ready to take applications probably in 3 to 4 weeks. There's still the process of submitting the amendment. HUD will still review it, and they will still need to prepare the funding agreement with the city, which will come to us. And once we have that, we will be able to start allocating the funds.
So Matt, those utility billing customers that have not been able to pay their bills and have not had service shut off, what is the plan regarding that in lieu of waiting on these funds to come through?
As far as where we're at with utility account collection and shut off, so we've developed a strategy towards working with our residents. We require first and foremost just that they contact us and work out a payment arrangement or plan or explain the situation. So far that's been in the last 3 weeks, I'm pulling up the numbers, but very successful. I think we've had about a 2/3 reduction in delinquent utility accounts. Again, we've suspended all late fees and penalties. So essentially it's working with the utility department to make sure that we have a plan to keep, you know, you working with us, whether it's through the granting agencies that exist currently, whether it's through the upcoming CDBG funds or other avenues to do our best to be making positive progress on payments and on account currency. So right now we have, down from our high of almost 1,400, we've about cut in half to 750 accounts that are delinquent. And our dollar amount has gone down from a high of $350,000 to just a little over $219,000. So our proactive approach of contacting, calling each resident, trying to work through strategies, plans, solutions, is definitely paying off. And then this CDBG money, I think, will help those who just are, to your point, in a place where they just can't get current or can't make a payment.
And then I think since the county has allocated $5 million for residents through their social services department to allocate funds, this is separate than their small business grant program, do we know, or are we coordinating with them as far as identifying utility billing customers that really are just cannot make ends meet, that have been unemployed due to COVID, that have been in sort of an area of either eviction or foreclosure on their homes, you know, having the, and I don't know where it's going to go nationally, but having the unemployment allocations reduced, I don't know when that's taking place, but I think all of this is going to hit at once, and I just want to make sure there's a coordinated effort that we're also ensuring the Palm Coast residents, the ones that we've identified that are in great need, that have been greatly impacted, that we can assist using CDBG funds, CARES Act funds for residents, and who is coordinating that effort?
So right now we've just assigned a point person from the city to help work with the TDC, to work with the county. And it's Jason DiLorenzo. He's
but the TDC is different,
right? So
yeah,
he's working at that point. Cynthia's here, can talk about her connection with the CARES Act fundings. I believe she's online.
Yep, I'm here.
And coordinating our efforts on that. And Cynthia, did you want to?
Good morning, Council. I have been in communication with the county and local agencies all over Palm Coast and Fire County. I'm working with them on assisting residents. We actually have compiled a list of agencies that have funds, and that's been helping us a lot with the cutoffs on people that are in need of assistance. So we have a lot of agencies stepping in with funding. So it's been helping a lot of residents. And we also have been setting up a lot of payment arrangements. We've been working with residents. And knock on wood, we've helped everybody. We've kind of really expanded our notification process. You know, they're getting almost 7 notifications before shutting off. We're really, really trying to make sure that we're here for the residents before we even go out there and shut them off.
So will Cynthia be working with the county social services department that's going to be managing the $5 million for the Residential CARES Act money?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been in communication with Janet Nichols back and forth on the process. She gave me the applications of what the resident has to go through to even get it, and we've been providing them that information. So we've been communicating every week on the process.
Applications now, or has that program been opened for that $5 million, or is that yet to be opened?
So they have one application process where you fill out the application and they go through the process, and then if you go through the process, then they'll tell you the funding part. So I think they're tapping into a different fundings for, but it's only one application process.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Council questions or comments on this particular agenda item?
No, we went extensively over it in last workshop, so I'm pretty familiar with it.
Mayor, I'll just add that, I'm sorry, but that I've also been in communication with the social service department to just, because they did have questions about whether they were going to have to manage these funds, and we just made it clear to them that this, because this is a CDBG allocation, it would have to be managed in sort of a different way than the other allocations. But they're understanding, they understand that and understand that this is just an additional resource that's available for residents of Palm Coast.
Yeah, I think the more we can coordinate, the better. So, you know, if this is allocated where we've found a great solution for the more the utility customer aspect of it, and then the CARES Act, the county has funding allocations for other utility payment assistance or rental assistance or mortgage assistance for their Residential CARES Act funds, there might be a way to maximize those. My fear is that we are coming up to a very critical time in our community where, you know, businesses have been reopened by the governor, but yet there's a lot of unknowns to that, and I just want to make sure that when we have these funds in place that we're prepared to be able to respond quickly to those that are really in crisis mode financially. And I just have a feeling that I see this coming, again, due to maybe the shift in the unemployment and how many people are going to be back to work or not back to work. There's just a lot of unknowns throughout this process, and this is a large amount of money, not just with what we're talking about here, but the other $5 million hopefully will go a long way in facilitating some relief for those residents. Okay. Right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, and no other questions or comments from council? I'll open it up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please call in at 386-223-1690. You have to hit the *9 to raise your hand. I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to approve this resolution.
Is there a second?
I think.
Second?
Yep. You know, Wolf was trying to.
Yep.
Yes, there is a second. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Klufas.
Yes.
Councilmember Branquino.
Yes.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yes.
Mayor Holland.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. And thank you, honestly, this is a really important program, so this is much appreciated that this was a creative approach to utilizing these funds. So, good things. Agenda item number 5 is a resolution approving the technical site plan Tier 3 for Palm Coast Storage on State Road 100, application number 4011.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. Again, a resolution approving a technical site plan for storage on SR100. And we have Bill Hoover here today for presentation, information, and discussion.
Good morning, everyone. Bill Hoover, I'm in the Community Development Department. The subject
mask,
property.
Bill, what is that? What's on your mask? What is that like?
I think it's fish.
Okay. I was like, okay.
Hey.
The subject property is 23.43 acres. It's located on the north side of State Route 100, east of the interstate, and about a half mile west of Colbert Lane. This is a Tier 3 technical site plan, and since it's over 100,000 square feet of non-residential, it comes to the City Council after being reviewed by the Planning Board. In this case, they're proposing 164,475 square feet of self-storage buildings. Their request also includes some 58 spaces for outdoor storage of RVs and boats. The future land use map shows the project area designated mixed use, which is one of our more flexible designations. It basically, it allows everything from residential, institutional, office, commercial, and even light industrial districts. To the north of the project, the west of the project, and south, everything is designated conservation. And then east of the project, it's designated residential. So this is our city zoning map. And actually, south of State Route 100, it's actually Flagler County zoning. But to the south, that is a PUD for conservation. To the west of the site, it's preservation, and that's where the Graham Swamp is located. To the north of the site, it's zoned single-family residential. However, much of that is wetlands. To the east of the site is multifamily. This is a site plan, and the north arrow is to the right, so you can have a little bit better clarity for it. So State Route 100 is on the left side of the screen, and as you enter the project, you would go past a 3.5-acre commercial project. So that land area is part of this technical site plan. However, the only thing being developed would be infrastructure, including the road and utility lines. So when that comes back in, it would require another technical site plan for that commercial area. As you get further into the site, there's a office area and a self-storage building. I think the office area is about 900 square feet. There's a stormwater lake that would work for the whole project. And then as you go back further into the site, there's some RV and boat storage areas on the right-hand side, as well as there ends up being 10 self-storage buildings, plus the largest building is just a RV roof storage areas. And then clear at the back is a RV and boat storage area again. So this is something that the City Council is probably familiar with, the Ocean Village. This is a concept plan, and it's approved for 416 multifamily units and 3 commercial tracts. So the north arrow is at the top again. So State Route 100 is at the bottom of the screen. In red, you can see the 3 commercial areas. And on the left side of the picture is the self-storage facility, including the access drive. So the green areas shown on the Ocean Village concept plan are actually wetland areas that are being preserved. And then the blue area is a pond. So you have, at a minimum, about 300 to 400 feet of conservation area or ponds before you would have the closest residential building. This is a building elevation that's been reviewed by city staff. These buildings are going to be set very far back. However, their colors are taupe with a red metal roof. The upper left is what you would see from the road at a distance, perhaps 400 feet back. The one in the upper right is the view from the east. And then at the bottom is the first building where the self-storage would be located, in including the office. Planning staff's required to review each technical site plan for 5 review criteria from the Land Development Code. In this case, we analyzed it. It must not be in conflict with public interest, and it must be consistent with both the comprehensive plan and the Land Development Code. It must not impose a significant hardship or liability on the city, must not create an unreasonable hazard or nuisance, and must comply with all government standards. We reviewed this in detail and provided detailed findings in the staff report. In summary, the technical site plan will not create a nuisance hazard or any compatibility issues, as it meets all development standards and is in compliance with its mixed-use designation on the future land use map. The project also has already needed infrastructure in place, and it supports 4 goals, policies, or objectives of the comprehensive plan, and meets all standards in the Land Development Code in the high-intensity commercial district. On June 17th, the Planning Board reviewed and recommended approval by a 4-0 vote to City Council on this Tier 3 technical site plan, and no one spoke for or against the project at this hearing. In addition, we've had no comments throughout the technical review process. The Planning Board found this project in compliance with the Land Development Code and Comprehensive Plan and recommended approval to City Council for application 4011 Palm Coast Storage on State Route 100, a technical site plan Tier 3. And the applicant's representatives are in virtual attendance, and they're available for questions as well as myself.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item at this time?
No, Ms. Mayor, my only comment would be that I think the boat and RV storage is going to be applicable. I've seen the other boat and RV storage on Colbert Lane. I suspect that a lot of the individuals who have boats who aren't going to be on boat or have boat slips in the developments that are going on Colbert are probably going to need a place to store their vessels. So this seems like it would be pretty viable, in my opinion, but that's, I drive Colbert every day, so maybe I see it more frequently.
My question is about the safety when you have RV storage during storm events and those things. How is that secured and ensured that will not pose a safety risk, is in particular when we have these major events in our community?
That's a very good question. As far as I know, all the buildings would be built to at least 130 mile an hour wind, so that puts that part in pretty good shape. As far as let's say you got a travel trailer, those are not as stable as a building, and they certainly don't meet 130 mile an hour wind code. So I think as far as, yes, you could have internal damage to the site if it got hit by a hurricane or a tornado. However, because it's surrounded by a conservation area, Grand Swamp to the west, that's I'm not sure, maybe a half mile wide, and to the north, So we really don't have, and then to the east we've got about 400 feet of conservation area also. So if we did get damage, it would be internal to the site.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm wondering, off of Colbert, is that not in our coastal high hazard area? Is that not designated because of the proximity to, I know Grand Haven is, proximity to the intercoastal waterway, if that is not in a area of concern?
Yeah, I'm not sure where that goes, but where that official line is, you know, now Ray might know, but I know when you get in the coastal high hazard area, you're, for instance, like Windows, it jumps to the next higher level.
Okay. Morning.
I'm not certain that it extends west of Graham Swamp, if I recall looking at the maps correctly.
No, it is. Yeah, you're right, Mr. Kloofus. It is typically the high wind hazard zone would be on the east side of Colbert Lane. So this would fall outside of that. But, you know, it's going to go through our, you know, the next steps. It's, you know, they'll submit for building plans. And we're going to, you know, our building department's going to make sure that it complies with all the health and safety hazards of the site. So, and typically, you know, maybe the applicant also may, or the owner of the property who's representing today, they may have specific plans. Maybe they want to comment on that as well. You know, if the hurricane coming, what their policy and what their procedures are on handling, you know, evacuations and tying up things of that nature. Because I don't think they want their building destroyed by a boat that's not secure either. So.
Yeah. Okay. Council, any questions or comments at this time before I open it up to the applicant for response?
No.
The applicant is here or on remote?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. I don't know, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, this is John Abion. I'm with Florida Engineering Group. We're the civil engineers representing the developer. In terms of the question with respect to the buildings, hurricanes, basically they will be designed for the building code for, you know, the city. With respect to the internal vessels, the owner would require everybody who's going to store their boat in there to have a hazard liability coverage in order for them to store their vessel on the property. So they will be required to have that special liability hazard insurance going in. So that would cover both, you know, the building, the structure, and the RVs for boats. I hope that kind of answered your question on that item. As far as the overall project, staff did a great presentation, so I don't want to repeat what they have said, but basically we comply with all the required regulations for the city and other agencies. We requested no waivers for that project, and as you know, a self-storage facility is a least intrusive, least intense use in terms of traffic and noise. So, and it is a perfect location adjacent to all these residential development. So we respectfully ask you to approve our project.
And as far as the frontage of the storage facility, will there be obviously some tree landscaping requirements as per our codes as well?
Correct. That is correct. There will be actually a couple of you know, landscaping buffers, if you want to call them that. There is one along State Road 100, a 25-foot landscape buffer. And then there is another one, you know, if you go in beyond the future development that staff has showed, there is that we have a four-acre pond. And that four-acre pond on the south side, there's going to be a lot of landscaping. So you're going to have two sets of buffers before you can really see anything within that internal development.
What is the length of the frontage, the visible from 100? What's the length of the of that project? the visible part of it at the very end.
Yeah,
because I noticed that's like a funnel.
The frontage, you know, is about 275 feet along State Road 100. It kind of expands as you go north, but the frontage itself is probably the smallest part of the site.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll just add, it's going to be very difficult to see these storage facilities, especially the outside storage, because that's all the way in the back. And I think Mr. Hoover's presentation shows it really is nestled with buffer all around it. You couldn't get a most perfect spot. And then just to be reminded that, you know, there's a lot in front that does face State Road 100. That's for a future commercial building, not storage, that would also have to meet our code. So that in itself would also buffer. So you'll have the building, then you'll have the pond in back of that. So it's going to be very difficult to see any of the storage facilities at Biltown.
Thank you.
And the access point of the boat storage and stuff, that's on Colbert or what, State Road 100?
State Road 100, Mayor.
Okay. All right. And we've done we'll do like a traffic and like to see how much frequent let's use and adding capacity to the roadway.
Yes, we've already conducted that. And, you know, storage facilities, very, very low.
Okay.
It's like 425 trips a day is all it is.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. Any other council questions or comments before I open up to the public? Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 5? You can do so by please calling in at 386-223-1690. Okay. Thank you, Doug. We'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call, Virginia, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Yes.
Councilmember Branquino?
Yes.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Mayor Holman?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very much. Have a great day. Agenda item number 6 is a resolution setting a proposed maximum millage rate and setting the first tentative budget hearing date, time, and location for the fiscal year 2021.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. Pursuant to Florida statutes, we do have a presentation today, informational, on the maximum millage rate and the presentation, and we have Helena Alves, our finance director, here to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Good morning, Mayor, City Council. We will go over the general fund budget details this morning. We have not received any updates from the state revenues. So the presentation today, it is very similar to last Tuesday's. There were no significant changes. I will now introduce Gwen Regsdale, our budget manager, and she'll go ahead and get us started. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Just to recap our budget presentation timeline on where we've been and what you've seen already, in March, we had the survey results and the annual City Council staff evaluations. In April, you had the annual financial audit. In May, the year-to-date budget result presentation, along with fund accounting presentation and the 10-year CIP and revenue restrictions. And then in June was the property tax presentation, along with the adoption of your council priorities. In July, we came to you with the general fund workshop, and today we're here to adopt the maximum millage rate. Also in July and August, we will have further budget workshops and presentations to City Council on other budgets. And on September 10th will be our public hearing to adopt the tentative budget, and the final millage rate and budget will be held on September 23rd. For October through December, we will have our fiscal year-end closeout and year-end review with departments. So today, we're going to look at the proposed personnel changes, along with a summary of the general fund revenue and expenditures, and the millage rate recommendations. So this is an overview of the general fund positions that are being requested. We have four new positions, and we will go into more detail in the next slides on. So first we have our transfer in street maintenance for a public works supervisor of facilities to move to facilities maintenance, along with an inventory specialist to move to fleet. In financial services, we have our compliance manager who is split with building to move back 100% to financial services, along with a new financial tech one to support stormwater. In planning, we're doing a transfer of the construction site inspector and senior construction inspector from CM&E. And fire is requesting three new firefighter EMTs. All of our budget positions will include zero merit raises and zero cost of living for 2021. The construction CM&E is again transferring to planning their construction site inspector and a senior construction inspector. Code enforcement was splitting a 50-50 with building person. Parks and recreation and parks maintenance will be splitting 50-50, a recreation manager. And Parks and Rec has also asked to reclassify a facility and guest attendant from seasonal hours to two full-time positions. Next is our general fund summary, and Helena will review that with you.
Thank you, Gwen. As you can see, and we'll go over in detail in the next few slides, but we are increasing the budgeted expenditures by $1.16 million, and we are carrying the $1.5 million for the UNF MedNex to fiscal year 21, and also proposing to use some of the contingency and fund balance appropriation to help us adjust any revenues and expenditures for fluctuations that we may experience due to COVID-19 and to the fact that we really haven't received the state revenue estimates yet. So as we move to the next slide, get into detail of our general fund projections. The ad valorem property taxes, you see an increase of about $1.6 million. Our property values have increased 6.86%, which 2.97% attributable to new construction. We are still expecting the state revenues, but we're projecting a revenue decrease of 25%, and you'll see that reflected on the next line for half-cent sales tax, and the state revenue sharing. The other significant decrease in the general fund revenues is related to charges for services, and that is mainly for areas of parks and recreation that will be either closed or reducing programs due to COVID restrictions. The fund balance appropriation, as I mentioned earlier, is for the MedNex and also to help us mitigate any fluctuations in revenues. A look at our administrative services department. As you can see, the total expenditures projected increase of 2%. Not many changes here other than the personnel changes that Gwen outlined earlier. As we move to construction management and engineering, the change here of almost 30% is due to the transfer of three positions to other departments within the city. Planning and code enforcement, the transfer from CM&E came into the planning. That's why you see that increase of $403,000, and code is pretty much staying at the same. Public safety, the fire department is asking three firefighter new positions starting January 1st for 9 months of the fiscal year. We also have the law enforcement contract with the sheriff's office. It includes a 5% increase as per contract, and also two new sheriff deputies funded at 9 months of the fiscal year. Streets maintenance is pretty much maintaining level. There's a decrease of 2%, and the personnel changes that were outlined by Gwen earlier. Parks and Recreation, including parks maintenance, as you can see, the same reduction of about 2%. We do have corresponding revenue reductions with some of these programs. The main change here is that Parks is requesting to reclassify seasonal part-time hours to full-time positions to help them manage the challenges of the department. Non-departmental, this is where you see the MedNex contribution, but also the contingency. We're proposing at $650,000 contingency to help us deal with revenue fluctuations. This is a look at our ad valorem tax distribution. We'd like to remind our residents that every dollar we receive 23 cents out of that dollar. Flagler County receives 41 cents, the school board 31, and then other share a 4%. This is a look at our millage rate and property tax history. We've maintained the same millage rate for 2019, and we are proposing proposing the same millage rate for 2021. Our property values did increase by 6.86, and as I mentioned earlier, that's about 1.68 million more in property taxes. These are the millage rate options. The rollback rate would be 4.5236. 2021 majority vote would set a maximum of 6.3454. Two-third vote would set a maximum of 6.9799. We are proposing fiscal year 2021 millage to remain the same as fiscal year 2020 at 4.6989. We'd like to remind our residents that we have access to this presentation as well as all of the budget worksheets available on our financial services website of the city website. We also like to remind our residents that the resolution approved today sets the maximum millage rate. It also sets the date and time for the tentative budget hearing. It will be scheduled for September 10th at 6 p.m. at the Palm Coast City Hall Community Wing, located at 160 Lake Avenue, Palm Coast. I will take any questions.
Council, any questions or comments?
Just to remind the people out there that the ones that weren't here with a workshop, that this millage rate, if approved, could only go down, will not be able to go up. That's important to tell people out there, okay?
That is correct.
Yep. I would have one comment as well, Ms. Mayor, is that I think everyone on our council, and I only speak for myself, but I'm sure everyone else wants to thank our city staff for foregoing increases and COLO increases this year. As a council, I think it's important that we prioritize making sure that our employees are taken care of in some way, whether or not that means in the future if our recovery is much more rapid than perhaps anticipated, that we ensure that we remember what we're sacrificing today so that those individuals are remembered tomorrow. And I only say that because I've experienced the same type of thing in my industry as well, where there's basically been a pay freeze, but that doesn't necessarily mean that cost of living is going down. I say this all because I would hate to lose some of our best employees to the private sector, and this seems to me like it would be a time that would be right for that. So I just want to make sure that as a council, we can extend our gratitude to our city staff, that we're thankful for what they're doing and in a hard time being understanding. And I just want to personally say thank you to all the city staff for what we're going through right now and being malleable in such a difficult time.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? Echo those comments from Vice Mayor Klufas, and just really want to add an emphasis when we're going through these challenging times. The council had set a priority a few years back, and we're making progress. But the Be Local, Buy Local campaign, when you look at the reduction in sales tax revenue that we're seeing in this fiscal year, that is a dramatic impact to our budget. And we will, you know, have to make some tough decisions moving forward if we see those trends continue. And our business community, frankly, needs us now more than ever. And we can lend to that effort by ensuring that we're communicating to our residents on why it's essential and critical that every single dollar they can spend really needs to be spent in Palm Coast for goods and services, for frequenting those businesses. And so Matt, I would once again implore you to please make sure we are pushing this Be Local, Buy Local campaign in every avenue possible. And we're highlighting that fact and that effort because we're seeing that impact already in this year's proposed budget, a substantial impact of loss of revenue. And as COVID continues to be an issue in our community, and those that are not traveling on our roadways and fueling up their gas tanks, every dime and every dollar collected is going to count. And so I really think I want to make sure there's an emphasis put on all of that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. We'll open it up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 6, please do so at this time by calling in at 386-223-1690. Okay. Thank you, Doug. Council, I'll take it back to you and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve this millage rate.
I will second. Yep, or third.
Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Yes.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Agenda item number 7 is a resolution approving the selection of a certified public accounting firm to perform independent audit services and authorizing the city manager to negotiate and execute a contract for the said services.
Thank you, Your Honorable Mayor, City Council. There is no presentation today. We do have staff available for questions. This is coming back to you from the workshop where you ranked and voted on the highest ranking auditing firm, which was James Moore & Company. This resolution would allow and authorize me to go prepare and negotiate a contract with James Moore & Company. Once that is completed, to bring that back to you for approval.
All right. Council, any questions or discussion? I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 7, please do so at this time. None? Okay, thank you, Doug. I will now bring it back to the council and entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion as to priority was ranked on the workshop.
Great, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Yes.
Councilmember Cuff?
Aye.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Agenda item number 8 is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement, Flagler County Coronavirus CARES Act Relief Funding Distribution Funds.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This is a resolution with Flagler County, Flagler County being the subrecipient of CARES Act funding. This resolution simply is a process and agreement by which the city itself, for our expenses for COVID-19 readiness, both for past actions and some, I think we have a few ongoing purchases left to be calculated for safety equipment, PPE, and computer materials so we can continue to work and deploy remotely. This agreement sets forth how we work with the county to obtain that reimbursement and sets forth those guidelines under their process and the CARES Act. And this is, again, this does not impact the monies we talked about going to our citizens.
So, Matt, I have a question. Are we, I know for the government aspect, they allocated $5 million. I know that the county is utilizing some of those funds for the testing, the cost of testing that they had proceeded with for our residents, which was very important and critical. Are we sure, and even moving forward, the prolonged amount for COVID in our response, are we allocating any funds or adjusting any funds or looking forward to any funds, in particular when we're looking at, you know, what is allowable under these dollars? Do you Do you have a thought on that? I know you talked about some of the things.
I have a couple thoughts. Okay. Yeah. So one of the theories, of course, that everyone is working under is that all of this money, as much as possible, should go back to our community. So, you know, our first tier of evaluation and thought process has been let's be prudent, let's be reasonable, let's really identify those things we need, such as the wastewater testing, again, agreed upon as a public health emergency and great data point. We've had, again, some computers so we can continue to work and even broaden our remote capability through our billing department, through our finance department. Again, some PPE and things. Yes, we've looked at the potential for what reimbursements will fit under the CARES Act currently through, I believe, the cutoff date was the end of June. Again, we've tried to be very focused on what needs we have and what we can reasonably forecast that would either come in a subsequent CARES funding request through the normal FEMA reimbursement process, if that is going to take place. To say, we've looked at the wastewater testing, and we'll look at, you know, those things we know or reasonably expect. But again, I think the philosophy we're trying to take and are in agreement with the county is as much of that money, even that $5 million that was allocated to the county and the city, if that can get put back into the community, that should be our maintained focus on trying to see that happen.
And those cleaning machines?
Yes, the aeroclaves that we bought way back in February, right as this crisis was even unfolding. Some of the glass you see here now at City Hall, the directional materials, again, a decent amount. I think it was shy of, it might be on that precipice now with a recent order, about $100,000 to update, make sure we have the right mobile device technology. When this first started, we literally had people check out their desktops right off their desk and take them home. So we're making sure that we remain robust, that we remain capable, and that we remain open to future opportunities. Again, the wastewater. We had an emergency purchase approved. I approved. Well, it's in process of being approved. To your point, Mayor, on the Be Local, Buy Local, for making sure now is the time to get radio messaging and other messaging out to our community to be local, to buy local, to keep those dollars bouncing around our community. So we're doing the best we can in forecasting needs, but again, also trying to make sure that we only use those things that are absolutely necessary. So all this money, as much as possible, goes to our community members.
Thank you. Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item? Any member of the public wish to make public comment on this resolution? I just want to also thank the county for their relationship. Also, I know, Matt, you've worked closely to identify those with Helena for budgetary items. And I think it just reflects the collaborative nature that we have been able to forge throughout these COVID response times. And this is just one example that highlights that. So a great effort. And again, I really do appreciate the county's approach, not only in the allocation of separating the funds from the residential personal side, the business side, and then obviously the government side. So. Good job done by all involved. Okay, I'll ask for a motion to approve this resolution.
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Aye.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Wonderful. Agenda number 9, resolution approving the nuisance abatement initial assessment.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Again, this is coming back to you, as was heard at the council workshop on July 14th, and there have been no changes to this suggested item. If there are questions or discussion, Jason DiLorenzo is here in lieu of Barbara Grossman to answer any questions that you may have.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item?
No further questions at this time on my side.
Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please call in by calling 386-223-1690. Thank you. We will take it back to the council. Entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion for that resolution to be approved.
For a second. Wonderful. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Nicholas. Or, I'm sorry, yes.
Councilmember.
I read Nicholas there, sorry.
Councilmember Branquino.
Eddie Branquino, yes.
Councilmember Robert Cuff.
Just plain Bob, yes.
Mayor Holland. Yeah. Motion passes 4-0.
Oh, thank you. Okay, we'll move to our consent agenda. Any member of the public wish to make comments on consent agenda 10 through 19, please do so by calling in at 386-223-1690. We will close the public comment portion of the consent agenda, and I'll take it back to council. Entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as read.
I'll make the motion to approve the consent agenda from 10 to 19.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Aye.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
I'll be front.
Thank you. We'll now move to the final portion of our public participation on the agenda. Any member of the public wish to call in at 386-223-1690 *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted, and please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin. Okay, thank you very much. We will close public participation, and I will move to agenda item discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Councilmember Branquino.
Yeah. Other than thanking everybody for the compassion that they've been showing me for what happened to my son, on a lighter note, someone that I was talking with this week, you know, it actually made me laugh because he was reading about the wastewater testing. He said, "You sure it's testing, not tasting?" No, it's not tasting, it's testing. And this really happened. This really happened. Mr. Urbano was the one talking to me, and he said that. I says, no, don't worry about it. It's not testing. It's testing, not tasting. You know, even though I'm not in the mood to. But that's actually, it actually took place, this conversation. Thank you, Mr. Urbano.
That's funny. Thank you. Vice Mayor Clufus.
Yep, I was just going to wish Councilmember Cuff a belated birthday, and I have no further comments for this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Cuff.
Well, I was going to suggest that conducting virtual meetings was just a lame excuse to get out of somebody buying me a cake, but that's been taken care of, so thank you for the good wishes.
Oh, my goodness.
To kind of flip Councilmember Branquino's comments, that was, I hope, a lighter note. But again, we need to make sure we're getting good information out to the citizens. My personal observation is that more businesses and more of our citizens are following CDC and the Public Health Department guidelines to try to prevent the spread of the virus, but we just can't let up. This isn't something that's going to go away this week or next week, and we need to be making smart decisions and constantly reinforcing what the current best thinking on this is to try to keep our citizens safe. So that's my comment for the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. And I concur with all of the statements made. So I appreciate it. And we will continue to move forward. Discussion by City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing to add, Mayor.
You're getting good with this unmuting, Bill.
Yeah, it just took me a couple months, that's all.
This discussion by City Manager of matters not on the agenda.
Three really brief items. One of them is brand new that just literally popped up on my screen, I'll share. But again, virtual town hall coming up. We'll have opportunity to sit again, as you had said, Mayor, the band back together, but representatives from the hospital, health district, city staff, Fire Chief Forte, Mayor, of course, Holland, and myself to continue another venue. Those were extraordinarily well-received. I know several of them are receiving over, you know, between, I believe, 25 and 30,000 engagements each is what I recall Tyler telling me. So it was a great avenue for communication. Along those lines of communication, so as good a time as any to let council know, you've probably, or I would hope by now you've heard, because I've heard it, Mayor Holland's voice on the radio as the start of an augmentation in addition to our Be Local, Buy Local campaign. an emergency purchase authorized to support the COVID activities. The real theory being every dollar that we keep on our, when we shop on Amazon, that dollar goes to Seattle and it stays in Seattle or wherever Mr. Bezos keeps his money, his billions. When we keep it here, it bounces around. When we go to a local shop and we spend that dollar, it goes to the next local shop next door and the grocery store down the street. And the worker there that's trying to pay their utility bill and buy groceries for their families, it is demonstrable, it is known. There is an impact on how those local dollars will circulate in our community. Some of those even wind up coming back months later in the form of state revenue share or gas tax or grant funds from other agencies that are relying on different funding mechanisms. So it's super important that, to the mayor's point, to this council's point, that there's another way that we can stand strong for our community, back to that Rise Up initiative, how we can rise up and be one community. This Be Local, Buy Local is so essentially important, especially now with some of this CARES Act funding coming online, which will hopefully, one, provide some much-needed relief to people and to our businesses. I read a national survey yesterday that said 28% of businesses surveyed are not sure they'll survive the next 6 months. And so this is a very dynamic situation. It's a very real situation. I know sometimes we think our actions or activities don't matter. They matter. They matter. Every, you know, little bit that we can contribute and help our fellow neighbors, our friends, our neighbors, our businesses, it's going to make a long-run difference for this community. And you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, hopefully, or less, when we're in recovery, we'll know those communities that were engaged in that and the ones that are not, I think, by the strength of that recovery. So we have a real opportunity here to contribute to our community. So we are working with our radio station. It's airing on all four stations. It's being blasted, I think, pretty much nonstop, just to hit home the importance of this message and the different aspects of this message. And then lastly, just because I think it just, again, just shows the capability. I know we hear a lot about it, and I send council updates with the field service lightning tracking and the different things we're doing in Palm Coast Connect. Our internal team, led by Steve Harris, of course, knew what was going on, heard the conversation, again, and knew this was a subject of us moving forward. And in less than 10 minutes, with the technology we own, with the resources we have and our know-how, was able to overlay the COVID heat map data with every single school in our community map. So that ability, to the council's point of getting and disseminating great information, thank you for giving us those tools and those resources. This is something, obviously, along with the zip code data we're sharing, we'll continue to figure out ways to share to make it useful. But just to have that capability within just a few moments for us to be able to augment, to take all this data we have, all the known infections, overlay it with our, you know, critical care facilities, or in this case, our schools, extraordinarily helpful in us making decisions on what we go and bringing a greater level of awareness to our community. And the fact, again, that we can do that with the tool we own, the technology we have, and the resources in a short order of time is absolutely remarkable to me. So, again, appreciate that investment in that tool and that technology.
That's great. That's really good.
I'll make a motion to adjourn if you're ready,
I'm
ma'am.
Ready.